Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday, the 21st of July, 2023. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jackie Donnellan.
Hello.
If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. The main headlines this week are: former verger sent to prison, £900 million ring-fenced for new hospital, and in association with the Winchester School of Art class of 2023. So, there we have the story behind the first headline, please. Heather!
Former verger sent to prison by Andrew Napier. A former Winchester Cathedral verger has been jailed for sexually assaulting two teenage boys between the 1960s and 1980s. Clive McLeister, aged 77, was sentenced to 16 years in prison at Inner London Crown Court after pleading guilty to 11 counts of sexual abuse. The first victim reported being assaulted between 1969 and 1970 when McLeister was a child welfare supervisor at a boarding school near Basingstoke. A second victim said he was sexually abused by McLeister when he was a chorister at Southwark Cathedral in the 1980s. At the time, McLeister, who abused the victim at his flat, had been the head verger at the cathedral. McLeister, formerly of the Hospital of St Cross, Winchester, later worked at Winchester Cathedral in the 1990s before moving on to work for the Queen at St George's Chapel, Windsor Castle, in 2000. He was acquitted of sex offences in 2003. A spokesperson for the Hospital of St Cross said the trustees were shocked when they learnt about the charges brought against Mr McLeister. On pleading guilty to the offences, he resigned as a resident and vacated his flat. If and when he is released from prison, he will not be returning to the Hospital of St Cross. At the time he was accepted as a resident of the hospital in 2006, Mr McLeister had been acquitted of all charges in an earlier trial. The hospital currently has stringent safeguarding criteria, which includes a requirement that all applicants for residency complete a DBS check. The trustees sympathise deeply with everyone affected by this matter. The victims came forward in 2019 and 2020. McLeister pleaded guilty to 10 counts of sexual abuse of two young boys between 1968 and 1987 on June the 26th. Winchester Cathedral has also commented, "We are shocked and grieved by the crimes of Clive McLeister, for which he was sentenced this week. We take the matter extremely seriously. The Cathedral maintains all appropriate safeguarding practices and is constantly monitoring its progress and systems in order to maintain a safer environment for all." Mamata Matin, senior Crown prosecutor from the Rape and Serious Sexual Offences Unit in London South, said, "McLeister flagrantly abused his position of authority and trust within the communities he served to commit vile offences against young boys, leaving lifelong trauma. McLeister will serve 8 years in jail and then be released on licence for a further 8 years."
Okay, Noel, let's have the second headline story, please.
Yes, £900 million ring-fenced for new hospital. Residents, councillors and Basingstoke's MP have discussed the next stage in the process for the new hospital in Basingstoke. At a meeting held at Rooksdown Community Centre, it was confirmed that £900 million has been ring-fenced for the new Basingstoke Hospital, which is due to open in 2032. News of the new hospital has caused fears for people in Winchester, with some worried that the Basingstoke Hospital will lead to the closure of the emergency department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. As previously reported, an online petition aiming to keep the emergency department open has achieved more than 10,000 signatures. A number of residents and councillors quizzed the panel about a number of issues, namely the location of the new hospital and whether it will be built on its existing site or the proposed ground at Junction 7 of M3. Residents suggested the building of the hospital should be at the Manydown development, which had been considered as a potential site earlier in the planning process. There was an emphasis from those on the panel about integrating healthcare across Basingstoke in an effort to improve care in both new hospitals and GP surgeries in the region. The project is set to progress to the next stage, which is a public consultation due in the autumn. Plans have been drawn up throughout the past few years by an organisation called Hampshire Together, which is a group of stakeholders led by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight ICB. Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, Alex Whitfield, joined Maria on the panel, as did Dr. Dominic Kelly, Managing Director of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, Sarah Tiller and GP Charlotte Hutching. Ms. Miller said this well-attended community chat allowed residents to ask representatives from the hospital, the Integrated Care Board and clinical staff for an update on the plans for our new hospital. Basingstoke's new hospital is set to open its doors in under 10 years' time and will be the biggest healthcare investment in our town's history. It is imperative that we get the plans right so that we can secure world-class healthcare for generations to come. Years of work have already gone into this project, and it was clear from the panellists that everyone involved is raring to go. I will be holding regular meetings in the build-up to the autumn public consultation to ensure residents are kept up to date every step of the way.
Over to you, Jackie, for the third headline.
Okay, this is in association with Winchester School of Art, Class of 2023. Winchester Cathedral was transformed into a sea of mortarboards on the 20th of July as graduates from Winchester School of Art, WSA, celebrate their achievements. Graduates in fine art, games design, graphic arts, fashion design, fashion marketing and textile design picked up their degrees alongside master's graduates. WSA, part of the University of Southampton, is one of the UK's leading art and design institutions, with a history going back almost 150 years. Notable alumni include musician Brian Eno, a former member of Roxy Music, sculptor John Buckley, best known for the Headington shark protruding from the roof of a house, and artist Mary Fairburn, who provided illustrations for J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. This is the second time WSA has held its graduation ceremony at the cathedral. Professor Larry Lynch, head of school at WSA, said, "It's been a fantastic year for WSA, and this year's cohort of graduates have produced some outstanding work. It is wonderful to see our graduates mark the end of their studies with a first-class graduation ceremony." University of Southampton Vice-Chancellor, Professor Mark E. Smith, added, "We are enormously proud of the unique and inspiring achievements of our WSA students. Their creativity and ingenuity never ceases to impress. Winchester Cathedral is a very fitting venue for our Winchester graduation ceremony, steeped in history and at the heart of the city centre. It is especially pleasing to be holding it here, as we signed a civic partnership agreement with Winchester earlier this year."
And that concludes our headline stories. Now we're going to continue with death notices and Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Bulgarum Diary, editorial comment, and letter from Westminster, and then first person. We'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with death notices. Beckwith, Eva Valerie, known as Valerie or Auntie Val Beckwith, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on 9th of July 2023, aged 87. Weller, Jane Weller, aged 86 and peacefully. Wilson, Daphne Margaret, nay Aspden Wilson, peacefully. And finally, Yeldrin, David Leslie Yeldrin, aged 81. Now we'll continue with Christian comment. Over to you, Heather.
Nigel Hemming has written this week's Christian comment. It's headlined Harmonic Tension. In a recent podcast, I heard the broadcaster Simon Mayo contemplating how it was that he was moved to tears by certain pieces of instrumental music, despite there being no words. Mayo cited a passage from Finlandia by Sibelius, which always causes him to well up, but he couldn't explain the reason why. This got me thinking about how, in most songs, the emotion comes from the lyrics in combination with a repetitive melody and the underlying rhythm, but that the emotion in instrumental music comes from a more complex set of harmonies. Two well-known classical examples come immediately to mind, Nimrod from Elgar's Enigma Variations and the popular Adagio for Strings by Samuel Barber. Radio 3's been featuring Samuel Barber this week. Both feature slowly ascending melodies, gradually building up the intensity towards a massive emotional climax. In both cases, the emotion comes from the way in which the underpinning harmony is accompanied by the sorted string. I beg your pardon. The underlying harmony is actually accompanied by the soaring string lines. The physics of Western music dictate that whichever key the music is set in, there are always some notes more important than others. Consequently, one particular chord or combination of notes represents home, and sounding the closely related chords which lead towards it can help to establish the feeling of safety. When, however, the harmonic accompaniment strays away from the home key, it sets up a feeling of unresolved tension. And the more that the chords stray away from home, the more that the tension builds. We subconsciously will the music, will find its way back to its root key. But in both cases, the chords just continue to circle around and around, never reaching home and ratcheting up an increasing sense of unresolved incompleteness. It is only right at the very climax of the piece that the chords finally land in the home key, and a feeling of peace and well-being is restored. Whatever the genre, be it drama or fantasy, biography or documentary, sci-fi or sport, the narrative is always driven forward by tension between characters, between values, between dreams and desires, and between opposing viewpoints. In instrumental music, the tension lives between the chord progressions moving away from the home key and those which are moving back towards resolution. Many of the Psalms in the Bible express the tension between what the author expects of God's kingdom ideals and their very real lived experience. The idea of coming home to ultimate safety is powerfully represented in Psalm 84. How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts! My soul longs, yes, faints for the courts of the Lord. Even the sparrow finds a home at your altars. We live in the constant tension of the now and the not yet of the kingdom of God. We welcome his life and presence in our gatherings and in our silence. But we live in a world which is in desperate need. Discipleship has to be about journeying towards our true home, while simultaneously being prepared to embrace the inherent tensions in our world and partnering with God to see its gradual kingdom resolution. Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 7 letters this week, and Noel will start.
Yes, I have a letter from Steve Turner and Ali Cochran, who ask what need for a speculative plan. As reported in the Chronicle on July the 13th, the development was savaged by local citizens in a public meeting. Of all the failings of the master plan, the most significant is that there is no evidence of any need for it. The only rationale for this development is that it follows the designation of Bushfield as an employment site in the local plan 2013. However, the Winchester City Council's own planning policy, WT3, states that the development of Bushfield is to meet future, currently unidentified needs. The emerging local plan goes further and suggests mixed-use, high-quality business and employment space, an innovation hub and creative industries on the site. But with no evidence whatsoever to support such a proposal, and this draft policy has not been subject to formal public examination. This appears to be retrofitting council policy to suit the development's master plan. It is a mystery why the Cabinet should collude with a master plan which directly conflicts with the Council's own planning policy, DM23, on development outside defined settlement boundaries. What is needed is a thorough independent economic development which needs assessment, because there is currently no indication that Winchester needs to develop this site for employment use. There is no need for office space, and there is an abundance of brownfield sites in the city. This speculative development, intended solely to generate capital for the church commissioners who own the land, provides no solution to any identified local need. Furthermore, it would create problems, especially in terms of transport congestion, damage to our ecology, and harm to the landscape. The scale of the development has insidiously been increased from a modest scheme to a massive overdevelopment with 4-storey buildings, hotel, retail, student accommodation and sports facilities emerging from initially modest proposals. The consultation process has disguised the needs of this purely speculative development. The council has now prevented the full council from even questioning its decision by cancelling the council meeting programmed for July the 13th, and stopped concerned residents from questioning the Cabinet's decision and presenting their petition. From Steve Turner and Ali Cochran, Winchester Labour Party, Sleepers Hill, Winchester.
Okay, I have a letter from Brian Shorter called Get What You Pay For. We are told by politicians, I assume correctly, that we are being taxed at the highest level for many years. Indeed, Winchester's Lib Dem candidate, Danny Chambers, suggests in his literature that he is against the fact that the government is delivering higher taxes. But did you know how low overall taxation, not just personal tax, is in the UK compared with most European countries? The proportion of the UK's GDP that was collected in overall taxation in 2021 was about 34%, while the equivalent figure for the whole EU was 42%, according to the OECD, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, and the EU. Figures for some other countries are Denmark 47%, France 45%, Sweden 43%, Italy 43%, Norway 42%, Germany 40%, Netherlands 40%, Greece 39%, Spain 38%, and Poland 37%, and USA 27%. So, with far less money to spend than other countries in West Europe, it isn't surprising that our services are not up to scratch. In addition, unusually in the world, our government funds a free health service for all, which is wonderful as long as we collect sufficient taxes to pay for it, but do we? and that's from Brian Shorter, Mount View Road, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
More exercise. Making city centre parking more expensive, bad. Discouraging people from using city centre businesses, bad. Reducing city centre traffic carbon emissions, good. Reducing vehicle-sourced air pollution, good. This is classical reason for having a democratically elected local council to research the facts, review the options, and produce a balanced plan. Ignoring political stereotyping, it is likely that those against the plan will make more noise than those in agreement or unconcerned. It is unclear if the Chronicle is taking sides or keeping options open for future development. I appreciate park and ride, subsidised public transport, and particularly park and walk. Our beautiful city can be a joy to walk through within 15 minutes of the centre. The city centre car parks remain open for those of limited mobility or who need to deliver or collect heavy loads. For the rest of us, hopefully the majority, if we can plan our journeys to reduce city centre car activity, we will all be making a contribution to cleaner air and giving ourselves the benefit of a little more exercise. Roger Farrell, Burriton Road, Hairstock.
And here's another letter about Bushfield and local plans from Judith Martin. Her headline is No Justification. The plans for Bushfield, which seem to be talked about as a fait accompli, are being promoted by the church commissioners, backed by Legal and General, and accepted, if that is indeed the case, by Winchester City Council. Winchester City Council declared a climate emergency in 2019 with the aim of reaching net zero across the district by 2030. Last month, it updated its earlier statement that the climate emergency was its overarching priority. The email address is http://www.winchester.gov.uk/news/2030/2023/jan/new roadmap/underpins the council. Underpins the council to be a greener, faster. This is admirable. The Church of England similarly is aiming to reach net zero, although they are less ambitious, and with a target of 2045, Archbishop Justin Welby says concern for the environment is an essential part of safeguarding God's creation. In the meantime, there is even a climate prayer. Unfortunately, word of this does not seem to have reached the church commissioners, or they would not be planning to build over undeveloped land rich with wildlife in search of a speculative profit. Now, to make matters worse, asset managers at Legal and General, among others, have voted against climate resolutions put forward by a Dutch shareholder activities group called Follow This. In previous years, they have voted in favour, but Follow This suggests the war in Ukraine has persuaded the money people to prioritise short-term profits instead of climate action. On top of all this, make architects, a rather surprising practice chosen by the church commissioners, also have commitment to the environment and set up a forum in which to discuss it. One of their designers said in 2020, "The questions people are asking now aren't just about how lovely the built space is, it's whether this building is destroying the environment. A cycle route or the odd green roof does not outweigh hundreds of tons of concrete, glass and steel, for which there is no actual need, has been articulated. It is really hard to see how any of the players in the Bushfield saga can possibly justify this out-of-town, car-dependent, superfluous development." Councillor Martin Todd says he opposed having the site in the local plan in 2012. He and his council must oppose any development now. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
RHCH Memories by Margaret Grant. On passing the Royal Hampshire County Hospital recently, I noticed that the beautiful prunus tree at the end of Ashley Wing had disappeared. This tree had brightened many a patient and staff's day when the wards on this wing were used. I worked as a nursing auxiliary, i.e. a bedband bedpan buffer-up extraordinaire on List Award for many years, and still remember the tree's beauty and have watched over the following years for its grand show. Perhaps it sadly had gone past its best, or space was needed for another purpose. I made many friends over those working years, along with countless happy and sad happenings. So many memories have popped up again in the old grey matter. For example, the slope between the wards and huts where porters needed all their strength to pull and push patients on trolleys to and from theatres and wards. Food trolleys full of gastric delights also were transported via this steep hazard. The grand view from the ward balconies, I hope, will not disappear for many a year. Uniforms were white for auxiliaries, green for state-enrolled nurses and white caps. State-registered nurses wore navy and white, with some beautiful silver belt buckles given by proud families at their graduation. Ward maids wore pink, and some lived in Burrell House. Many workers, doctors and nurses lived near or on site. My grandmother worked in the laundry, goffering the sisters' caps many years ago. She was threatened with the sack for trying to dry starched aprons quicker by putting them through a wringer. My dad's pin-up was Sister Hammersley of Clark Ward, who won Nurse of the Year. She, along with many other devoted ladies, nursed many a sick patient back to health. Maybe Florence with her lamp will now float further afield from the chapel to stir up the beings who need reminding to help, not hinder, the NHS and our Royal Hampshire County Hospital service once again. And that was from Margaret Grant, Burriton Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Resurfacing the wrong road. Penny found... Oh, there is a picture of a road... Straight, going off into the distance, nothing in sight except sort of wild, fairly untidy, leafless trees, far horizon of sky. That's it. So Penny Farncombe writes, could someone please advise me why a road that goes nowhere is a cul-de-sac and serves just one or two houses has recently been resurfaced completely? I'm talking about Five Bridges Road, off St Cross Road. Meanwhile, the roads in the rest of Winchester remain, with potholes and damage from all the building work, and no sign of any plans for resurfacing. In particular, my local roads in Oliver's Battery suffer hundreds of vehicles each week delivering children to the local school, have numerous holes and potholes and damage from builders. And it looks as though Chilbolton Avenue, which has been a building site for years, is just going to be patched up rather than resurfaced. This is a major thoroughfare, a much more important road than Five Bridges Road. Penny Farncombe, Fairfax Close, Winchester.
And George Spencer says help is needed. With the Southern League season a few weeks away, Winchester City has a bit of work to do tidying up the ground, something that was delayed this summer by construction work. While we were hopeful that it could have been completed last Saturday, the weather did not cooperate and made it very difficult to get much work done. Therefore, the ground will be open for the next two Saturday mornings for the remainder of the work to be carried out. If you are feeling community-minded, then come on down and offer your services for an hour or two. After all, many hands make light work, and it will pay off in the long run. George Spencer, Anstey Road, Alton.
And that concludes all of the letters to the editor for this week. Thank you very much to everyone who contributed. And we're going to stay with Noel, because he has got all the alternative news with Belgarum Diary.
Right. Belgarum Diary, alternative look at the news. And the first, I've got two. The first is Prison Stories Are Top Read. A new book on the history of Winchester Prison and stories of prisoners and staff has topped an old city bookshop's bestseller list this year. Doing Time by Liz Kavanagh and Leonie Montney proved most popular for P&G Wells, with the insight into 175 years of Winchester Prison, going behind the scenes to share the past and present stories of those inside. Coming in second was Licoricia of Winchester, Rebecca Abraham's biography of the 13th century Jewish businesswoman who battled anti-Semitism to become the wealthiest Jewish woman in England. Her statue stands next to the Ark on Jury Street. At number three was Gibbon's Years, a memoir by Jock MacDonald. Jock, a former master at Winchester College and city councillor, compares the events of his lifetime to those of the 2nd century AD described by Edward Gibbon in his 18th century classic as the time of greatest happiness and prosperity in the history of the world. P&G Wells manager Steve Scholey said, "As Winchester's independent bookshop, we're always pleased to support local authors whose work may not be available elsewhere. We're delighted that in previous years so many of our bestsellers are of local interest. All books are available online at pgwells.co.uk or in person at the shop in College Street." And there's a picture of Steve Scholey outside the shop holding the shop's bestsellers, three of them in his hands, looking very pleased. And the second story, Brine Blaming Long Boris. Winchester MP Steve Brine is blaming Long Boris for the predicted defeats in the by-elections this week. The MP, who is standing down at the next general election, was on BBC Radio 4's Westminster Hour on Monday and was asked if he thought the Conservatives would lose Uxbridge and South Ruislip, previously held by Boris Johnson. Mr. Brine said, "Yeah, it's another bit of what I call Long Boris, isn't it?" in a reference to long COVID, the chronic condition where sufferers are unable to throw off the impact of the disease. The Conservatives were today facing the prospect of losing all three of the by-elections being held. The other two are in Somerton and Frome and Selby and Ainsty. Mr. Brine, who chairs the Commons Health and Social Care Committee, did add that he had no idea who would win the seat. A Conservative colleague, Sir James Duddridge, a Boris Johnson supporter, called Mr. Brine's remarks ill-advised. Mr. Brine had the Tory whip removed by the Prime Minister Johnson in 2019 for voting against a no-deal Brexit.
And now it's going to be going over to Jackie again because she's got editorial comment.
Safeguarding hope for vile predator. Clive McLeister was described as a vile predator who has no place in society. He is starting a 16-year sentence for sex attacks on boys in the 1960s, 70s and 80s, some at a school in North Hampshire, others in London. From 1992 to 2000, McLeister was verger at Winchester Cathedral, and since 2006, a brother at the Hospital of St. Cross. He left after pleading guilty early this month. Both the Cathedral and Hospital of St. Cross have expressed shock at his crimes, and that will be shared by many people and parents in the city who knew him. The Metropolitan Police said McLeister has no place in society. The problem was that during the 1990s, McLeister did have a place in society, and it was in Winchester. We do not know if he carried on abusing, but it's likely that he would have certainly wanted to, as he had for the previous three decades. Perhaps he did somehow have a Damascene conversion. But most such offenders are devious and manipulative, and so there is a nagging fear that more than 30 years on, there may well be young people, now in their 30s or 40s, who are suffering in silence. One can only hope that the safeguarding policies of the cathedral and hospital have been robust enough to have deterred him.
And Heather has got the letter from Westminster.
And this week it's written by Flick Dumman, who is the Member of Parliament for Meon Valley. The illegal migration bill has been continuing its ping-pong between the Commons and the Lords this week, but it should have been settled by the time you read this. By ping-pong, I mean the Lords just put amendments and then the Commons looks at those and agrees or removes them. Of course, ultimately, the Lords is an amending chamber, an important role, but it has no power to stop a bill, only delay it. I have not hidden some grave reservations about parts of the original bill and had several meetings with colleagues and ministers to discuss them. One was the length of time for the detention of children. As I write, the detention time is at 8 days rather than the original 28 days. This is acceptable to me. Those who are young children will be processed quicker and put into appropriate accommodation. Those whose age is less certain will take the 8 days. This is a big problem, as many young men present themselves as being under 18 when they are not. Myself and many colleagues were concerned about the suitable accommodation for children and have been assured that there is ongoing work on this. Pregnant women will be processed within 72 hours. Modern slavery is still a concern but difficult to prove, so I was happy to see further amendments to this. The last issue I was concerned about was the safe and legal routes, and I had long discussions about this one with the Minister. I believe it will help if we have a robust and fair system of identifying conflict countries that need our help and give legal routes that might apply for asylum. As part of the United Nations system, we've taken around 550,000 since 2015. This number rather makes a mockery of opposition criticism that this government does not care about those in danger. Clearly, it does. Going forward, I would like to see a transparent and regular system of identifying safe and legal routes. And the Minister assured me the government is happy to look at this. Following these changes and discussion with ministers, I was happy to vote with the government on the bill. It is complex legislation with a simple aim to stop the boats. In this endeavour, the government has the support of most of the public. We must prevent economic migrants from making dangerous crossings that line the pockets of organised criminals. The system we have is not working. It needs changing. And the cost of illegal migration in housing and processing is now huge. For those who oppose these measures, I have only one challenge. What would you do instead? When I pose this question, I do not get a reply that is practical unless the person supports unfettered migration to our shores. Those in danger and seeking asylum have nothing to fear from this bill. It is the economic migrants, who are mostly young men, it wishes to stop. There appears to be some confusion also over the boundary changes when Meon Valley, which is Flick Drummond's constituency, will cease to exist in the next election. For clarity, I would like to confirm that three wards, Upper Meon Valley, Central Meon Valley and Bishop's Waltham, will move to Winchester and not be part of the new Waterloo and Fareham constituency. Flick Drummond, Member of Parliament for Meon Valley.
And it's over to Noel, because he's going to read First Person, and this week it's by Khaled Aziz.
Yes, Khaled Aziz's title is Keeping Faith with Our Young Folk. We live in a VUCA world. VUCA, V-U-C-A, is management consultant speak for volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous. Those four words perhaps sum up how most of us feel, perhaps increasingly these days, such is all the bad stuff that seems to be going on around us. So it was particularly pleasant as I bowed out of chairing the Hampshire Forum of the Duke of Edinburgh's award scheme to host once again a special reception in Winchester's Great Hall for this year's crop of Gold Award winners. Described by Prince Philip, the late Duke of Edinburgh, founder of the award scheme, as a DIY growing up kit, it's a tough challenge for any young person as they work their way through the bronze, silver and gold levels of the award. The emphasis is very much on building self-confidence and self-sufficiency, of stretching boundaries and challenging yourself. It can be tough, but the sense of achievement for those who have been through it is palpable. The pandemic presented obvious challenges to the scheme. It's hard to go on expeditions, even in remote and wild places, during a lockdown. The scheme adapted to keep things going, and as we emerge from the other side of COVID, Duke of Edinburgh appears to have hardly missed a beat. The organisations that promote the scheme, schools, scouts and guides, Boys Brigade and so on, have redoubled their efforts, and the numbers taking part are burgeoning. Gold award holders are invited to a reception at Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle. But additionally, in Hampshire, we hold a special ceremony for local winners, and the signs are that parents and supporters, along with the young people themselves, appreciate this extra piece of recognition as our Lord Lieutenant presents each individual with a special certificate from the county. What stories these young people have to tell. They are the salt of the earth. With so much focus in the media on young miscreants, it gladdens the heart to know that there are such young and aspiring leaders to make up the majority of tomorrow's society. What the DOE experience does in spades is encourage and inculcate a real sense of service to their fellows. So many of those who came up for their certificates are now engaged in really worthwhile activities, medical research, studying for a PhD, primary school teacher, a myriad of society-serving jobs. Most, in addition to earning a living, were also volunteering in all sorts of organisations, including putting something back into the DOE, the DOE award scheme itself, as lenders, leaders, having been through the experience themselves. These are the young people on whom the health of our future society lays. The scheme is in good heart and goes from strength to strength, now led by Prince Edward, newly created Duke of Edinburgh by the King in their father's footsteps. The Prince has thrown himself into this new role, visiting scheme activities up and down the country. If, when reading the papers or listening to the news on radio and television, you sometimes despair, you can be forgiven. But remember, the news bulletins do not accurately reflect our entire world. The Chronicle helpfully gave our Great Hall ceremony gratifying coverage, adding to the sense of occasion and achievement. Behind the celebratory picture lies an enormous amount of effort and dedication on the part of young people, testing themselves and going above and beyond what they thought they were capable of. On the night, their parents and supporters were justifiably thrilled with the achievement, and no doubt the change they could see as their young progressed through the process the scheme offers. Approaching 500,000 young people are engaged in the Duke of Edinburgh at any one time. However, there is scope for many more to share the benefits of being involved in the Duke of Edinburgh. It's open to all. So, what are you waiting for? Get them to sign up.
Let's look at lighting up time, shall we? Well, lighting up time on Friday the 21st of July ends at 5:15 and begins at 9:08 p.m. And Wednesday the 26th of July, it ends at 5:21 a.m. and begins at 9:02 p.m. Now, you can also listen to Winchester Talking newspaper on a new station called AWAS Community Radio, which is broadcast by Southampton University, and this is on every Saturday at 5 p.m. The programme is still 90 minutes long, and AWAS Radio is on digital radio channel 99.8 FM. That's AWAS Radio 99.8 FM. And the Winchester Talking newspaper is on every Saturday at 5 p.m. We'll continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jackie.
Event on life and times of the Fab Four. BBC Radio 2 presenter Whispering Bob Harris and former custodian of John Lennon's childhood home, Colin Hall, are bringing their Beatles show to Winchester, writes Sam Westerby. The songs the Beatles gave away, starring Bob and Colin, will play at the Ark in Winchester on Saturday, 22nd of July. They will chat about their love of the Beatles and songs which Sir Paul McCartney, John and George Harrison penned for other artists, including Cilla Black's top 10 hit Step Inside Love, Peter and Gordon's transatlantic chart topper A World Without Love, and Jackie Lomax's debut single Sour Milk Sea. Colin said, "First and foremost, I hope people will enjoy their evening with us and hopefully discover something new about the Beatles. Our remit is to delve into an often overlooked aspect of the story of the Fab Four. That aspect is, of course, songs John, Paul and George wrote at the time, but chose to give to other artists to record, rather than record with the Beatles. Bob and I not only trade stories people may not have heard before, but along the way we will call upon eyewitnesses such as Sir Paul himself, Sir George Martin, Cilla Black and George Harrison, together with clips from the songs themselves. The stage production was inspired by the Bob-hosted BBC Two Radio 2 documentary, which featured interviews conducted by Colin and his latest book."
Item of general news.
Hampshire is now home to 234 asylum children. A total of 234 children live in Hampshire, excluding Portsmouth and Southampton, and under the status of children seeking asylum. These children arrive in small boats after more than 6 months of travelling as the migratory crisis widens throughout Europe. The provisional total for 2023 now stands at 10,139, according to the latest data from the Home Office. Between June the 10th and 17th, over 2,000 people were reported to have arrived. Minors can arrive through means other than boats. On occasions, unaccompanied children will disembark from the back of lorries using the M27 or the M3 or the A34 corridor. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council explained, "These children are known as spontaneous arrivals. For children identified as spontaneous arrivals, once they have arrived, they are age-assessed and identified as looked after. For each looked-after child, Hampshire County Council receives £114 for every night. Even though boats haven't arrived on the Hampshire coast, the small boat arrivals impact Hampshire County Council as it is a practice member of the National Transfer Scheme. The local authority, which covers the whole county apart from the two cities, takes 0.1% of these children through the scheme, meaning that Hampshire's mandated number is now 285. Currently, Hampshire County Council is looking after 234 children seeking asylum who are under the age of 18, with an additional 386 care leavers. The children come from many countries, but predominantly Afghanistan, Iran and Iraq. Many arrive with significant mental and physical health issues as a consequence of trauma experienced in their own country, as well as the journey to the United Kingdom, which in some cases can take unaccompanied children up to 6 months. The County Council receives £1.43 per child per night by contributing to the costs of placements. And current placements cost between, well, it gives you an annual number, but I wouldn't imagine it exceeds £143 per child. To support these children, Hampshire County Council offers them help through its specialist refugee teams, formed by 7 social workers, 2 family practitioners, 6 care-leaving personal assistants and administrative staff. Of the 234 children, 160 of them are in refugee teams, which support them with a therapeutic approach to help them overcome and recognise the trauma they have gone through. The team works closely with the Willow team to complete trafficking and age assessments, explore risks around exploitation, and with the help of the Red Cross, to locate and contact their birth families.
Future of Club for Blind in doubt. A support group for blind and partially sighted people in Winchester has warned that it might close due to a lack of members and financial support. The Colebrook Club, which meets monthly at St Lawrence Parish Room on Colebrook Street, has been running for around 30 years, acting as a space where blind locals can meet and find support, and provides activities for attendees. However, group leader Samantha Frolick said that the club might have to end due to a falling membership and rising costs. She said, "We are in a situation where we have not got enough members, and it's really since COVID people prevented from coming out, and I think word of mouth just hasn't got around really. We really don't want the club to close. I took over the club and have been running it for about 18 months, and I've tried to raise awareness and bring in more things to do. We've got a big garden party that we're holding on August 7th, and we're hoping it's not our last hurrah." Samantha said that the club might not need to close if it can find financial support, saying, "What would be really nice if someone could step in and support us financially. Any donations would be wonderful. We are not a profitable group at all, but members are really what helps lift the club, because that's how we get our membership. We run the club through the membership, and we have actually since applied for a grant, and we don't know if we're going to get any help from that. But we definitely want to spread awareness and let people know we are there, because there are a lot of people who suffer from partial blindness who don't know we exist." She added that people can help the club by volunteering to give talks. They can be on any subject, including items of interest, historical talks, or even performances by musicians.
Call to keep gas-guzzling tractors out of the city centre. And there's a picture of a tractor with a very large trailer going through Bridge Street in Winchester. A Winchester resident has complained of gas-guzzling tractors shuttling through the city centre to get from Boomtown to Romsey. Green Party member Richard Needham has spotted as many as three massive tractors with trailers carrying grass cuttings passing through the city centre every 10 minutes until 9 p.m. On Monday, July the 10th, Richard, who lives in Eastgate Street, decided to follow one of the tractors and saw that the vehicles were coming in and out of the Boomtown Festival entrance in Alsford Road. The Winchester resident continued to follow a tractor with a full load of cuttings leaving the site all the way to Romsey to a farm near Belbin's Business Park. During that trip, he says, "I met other empty tractors and trailers coming towards Winchester. These are gas-guzzling, polluting diesel engines doing between 4 to 7 miles per gallon, I understand. I'm not sure why they need to come into the city centre at all. Winchester city centre already has a pollution issue, and these massive tractors and trailers were coming back and forth all day with traffic backing up behind them." In response, a spokesperson for Boomtown said, "Although we do not have full control of the routes that contractors take, we are speaking with the drivers to advise them of the impact on the local community. We are hopeful that there will be minimal disruption from tractors going forward. The festival will be back at Massley Estate near Winchester for its 15th anniversary from Wednesday, August 9th to Sunday, August the 13th. The landowner, Peveril Bruce, has been approached for comment."
Bus service for New Estate still uncertain. Plans have been discussed for a bus service to serve the new Kingsbarton estate. Under the Kingsbarton travel plan, which was approved by both Hampshire County Council and developer Carla Holmes, a half-hourly service was to be provided to the estate's residents between the occupation of the 250th and 350th dwelling. However, residents have been left frustrated, as the estate has approximately 500 residents and a bus service still not has been provided. Plans for a service were discussed at the latest meeting of the Kingsbarton Forum on July the 11th. The council officers said that the future of a dedicated bus service for the estate rests on the outcome of a survey to gauge the interest of residents, covering how they use the services already in use on Andover Road. County Council Officer Lisa Cook said that the service had also been delayed due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the usage of public transport and park and ride services. Ms Cook said that the ideal sort of service for the estate would be comparable to the Springvale bus, which serves Kingsworthy, offering half-hourly buses Monday to Saturday and an hourly service on Sundays. However, the introduction of even such a service depends on the viable route for the service, with Hampshire County Council Officer Mike Griffith-Thorne saying that it would have to wait until the north and south development sites are linked before a service would be possible. The next meeting of the Kingsbarton Forum will take place on October the 12th.
Doctors strike disruption as consultants join dispute. Hundreds of appointments and procedures were cancelled by the trust that runs Basingstoke, Winchester and Andover hospitals during a previous junior doctors strike. Figures from Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, show that during the junior doctors strike from April 11th to April the 15th, a total of 1,569 appointments were cancelled over the 4 days. The cancelled appointments were 114 inpatient appointments, 59 day case procedures, 399 new outpatient appointments, and 997 outpatient follow-up. The Trust is now bracing for further disruption over the next 2 weeks as consultants and junior doctors take part in strike action. Junior doctors, who are members of the British Medical Association, BMA, were set to take part in 5 days of industrial action from Thursday, July the 13th at 7 a.m. until Tuesday, July the 18th at 7 a.m, which will impact services across Hampshire. It's the third strike by junior doctors since the pay dispute began. Consultants who are members of the BMA will also strike for 48 hours from 7 a.m. yesterday, Thursday, July the 20th, in the first industrial action by consultants during their current pay dispute with the government. Alex Whitfield, chief executive of HHFT, said that during the junior doctors' strike in April, the trust put plans in place to ensure the safety and welfare of our patients has not compromised during the strike.
Abuse campaign backed. A Winchester councillor has spoken about the importance of a campaign which highlights the abuse councillors receive. In January, Winchester City Council agreed to support the Debate Not Hate campaign, which was launched by the Local Government Association, LGA, last year. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative group on the council, brought the campaign forward and emphasised its importance. Councillor Horrell said, "We know as councillors and candidates debating and disagreeing with one another is a healthy part of democracy, but abuse and intimidation crosses the line into dangerous territory. The right engagement really matters. In research conducted by the LGA last year, 7 in 10 councillors reported experiencing abuse or intimidation. Anyone, regardless of their background or political affiliation, should feel safe to become a councillor and be proud to represent their community. But the increasing level of abuse and intimidation aimed at local politicians is preventing elected members from representing the communities they serve. The Debate Not Hate campaign aims to raise public awareness of the role of councillors in their communities, encourage healthy debate, and improve support for local politicians facing abuse and intimidation."
Deal averts bin strike. This is a nice story about our local area. A bin strike in Winchester has ended before it began after a deal was made between contractor Biffa and the GMB union. Union members, who are employed by the council's waste contractor Biffa, have accepted a pay deal on Monday, July the 17th, which will see HGV drivers paid £15.50 an hour and loaders paid £12 an hour. Nicola Dixon, GMB regional organiser, said, "We are pleased to announce that this dispute has ended before it has really begun. The settlement has been agreed in a professional manner, which means our members receive a pay rise they are happy to accept, and the residents of Winchester will not see any disruption to their curbside bin collections. As in any dispute, our members do not want to go on strike. This is always a last resort, which was not necessary on this occasion, as the pay offer put forward by Biffa was deemed reasonable by GMB members. If this shows us anything, it is that if an employer offers market rates, our members will accept and will continue to do their difficult, dirty and unappreciated job. A Winchester City Council spokesperson said, "We are pleased that Biffa has resolved this issue and there won't be any disruption to residents."
Station plans one step closer. Civic chiefs have agreed to trigger the next phase of a major development around Winchester Railway Station, despite a member of the public calling for it to be halted. Winchester City Council's Cabinet agreed to move forward with a master plan for station approach at its meeting on Tuesday. It was also agreed to release £295,000 from the regeneration reserve to fund the planning work. The City Council is looking at £150 million plus regeneration of the land between Gladstone Street and the cattle market on Andover Road, including the station car parks and Carfax. Ideas include up to 250 new homes, offices, shops, cafes and restaurants. A council report said its aim was to make it a place that people would want to linger rather than just pass through. Local resident Dr. Nicholas Dennis expressed his concerns over the scale of the scheme. He said, "There are several office buildings which have stood empty for years. Apparently they do not meet the requirements which are sought by the type of employers the council wants to attract to Winchester. While the council seems to have trouble implementing the smaller things that so obviously need doing, is it wise for them to embark on large projects that inevitably contain larger elements of risk?" The meeting heard that no decision on proceeding with the scheme would be made before late 2024 or early 2025, when the economic climate had improved, with inflation and interest rates expecting to be lower than now. It also heard that Network Rail, which owns the car parks at the station, has decided not to be a partner with any development. Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "I've always supported the principle of development here. It will support the economy and local growth. There is a huge shortage of quality office space in the city, which employers feel are fit for purpose." Council leader Martin Todd said, "The station area is not what it could be. We can do better than this. It needs to be connected, a connected sustainable development. I think it can be the engine for our new movement strategy. This is a product and sensible proposal." The committee agreed to the recommendations. The scheme's master plan is set to be completed by the end of next year.
Fight back on care home closure plan. Hampshire County Council's £173 million proposal to transform the future of nursing and specialist care accommodation has been criticised for care home closures. The local authority hopes to open 3 nursing homes and expand the care at 3 others, while shutting 7 others and withdrawing care services from another 3 over the next 5 to 6 years. Suggested closures include 36-bed residential home Bishop's Waltham House in the short term and Westholm in Hairstock, which provides long-term and respite care for up to 67 people after 2026. City Councillor for the Littleton and Hairstock Ward, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, said, "I'm pleased that Westholm isn't in the first round of closures. My main concern is when both public and private places are closing, will there be enough capacity? There's an increasing need for these facilities with an ageing population. Westholm is relatively new and built to modern standards, making it a valuable site on the edge of Winchester." Childminder Amber Hudson from Bishop's Waltham has launched a petition to save her local residential home in Free Street. The campaigner, whose 101-year-old grandma, Bessie Channon, is a resident at Bishop's Waltham House, said the proposal came as a huge surprise. Amber, 41, said, "I'm not just fighting this for our grandma. Bishops Waltham needs a care home. They say they're building one in the New Forest in Waterlooville, but what good is that to anyone in Bishops Waltham? There are still a lot of people in Bishops Waltham that don't drive. Public transport is being cut back every single week. And the staff who work there have all become friends to us. They put themselves out so much. They all know Grandma's little quirks. They all know what she likes, what she doesn't like." She said, "We need to do something. We can't just sit back and do nothing. I knew the response would be good, but I didn't realise how good it would be. So much support has come from the village and even from people who don't have residence there." The petition surpassed 900 signatures, less than a week after the County Council announcement, as the campaign nears its target of 1,000. Bishop Waltham's Parish Council Chair, Councillor Judy Marsh, said, "The Parish Council was shocked to hear the proposal to close Bishops Waltham House, a much valued and beloved residential care home in the town. With the population growth in the town and the increase in those aged 85 plus particularly, this facility clearly needs to be retained. The Parish Council supports the community who are keen to protect this valued facility and are gathering views in advance of the public consultation." Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Rob Pumby, said, "Hampshire is one of only a handful of county councils nationally to run our own network of care homes, but difficult choices face us as to where to focus our finite resources. Our adult social care service is therefore proposing to concentrate on the delivery of specialist nursing care, complex dementia care, and short-term support to either prevent a hospital admission or support a hospital discharge. This would not only meet the needs of a growing number of older people in Hampshire in the longer term, but it would be care that could be provided more cost-effectively in-house. The Cabinet will be asked to approve the opening of a formal public consultation on the proposals, which are planned to run for 10 weeks from the beginning of September." And there's a photo with the piece of Bishops Waltham House resident Bessie Channon with her family, at least two or possibly three generations of about 16 family members all around her.
In view of the piece that you've already heard about how the bus service for Abbots Barton, Kings Barton, has to wait until the north and south development sites are linked, this item is about the road diversion response, so they're sort of connected. Road diversion would be a disaster. Members of the Kings Barton Resident Association have continued to raise concerns over plans to divert Andover Road through the estate. The controversial diversion, agreed approximately 10 years ago, is due when the 2,000th home estate reaches 600 houses. There are currently approximately 500 houses completed. As well as the diversion, the current Andover Road would be closed to through traffic, except for bicycles and possibly buses. At a meeting of the Kings Barton Forum held on Tuesday, July the 11th, local association member Mike Sins said, "We've written to Councillor Humby, the county council leader, essentially saying that we think the consultant's report is unsatisfactory and inconsistent with local transport plan policies. And if those policies were used for an assessment, then we feel that the assessment would show that the best solution is to have both Andover Road and Winchester Avenue in the estate open to traffic. That does not in any way impact the amount of traffic coming to the city centre, so we're hoping for a response from the County Council to that." Mr. Sins also said that the Kings Barton residents are concerned over the impact of the local plan and what it could mean for traffic near the estate, saying, "We're concerned about the local plan and what it could mean for us because Sir John Moore Barracks is now in the local plan as a 1,000 house site. And also, I think it's about 850 additional car parking spaces for a park and ride. So that's going to mean additional traffic. The plan is an opportunity to think again about the decision to close Andover Road to traffic and divert it through Winchester Avenue, which is on the estate. It would be a social and environmental disaster for residents. The King's Barton Forum had heard at a previous meeting on March the 14th that residents had been unhappy with the plans for the diversion for some time, with 3,000 people previously signing a petition against the diversion. As previously reported, the campaign to stop the diversion has received support of Littleton and Harestock Parish Council. City Council leader Martin Todd last September criticised the idea of keeping Andover Road open, as well as Winchester Avenue, as having two main roads running in parallel would be an act of insanity in terms of urban planning and traffic planning. We can't have both. It makes no sense at all. The next King's Forum, King's Barton Forum, is scheduled for October the 12th.
Health alerts after TB case confirmed. The UK Health Security Agency has said that there is a confirmed case of tuberculosis in Winchester. The patient with the infectious disease is currently being treated at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. In a statement to the Chronicle, the UKHSA South East said they were working with partners following a confirmed case of tuberculosis who is being treated at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The organisation assured the public there is no risk that the infectious disease will be spread. Anand Fernandez, consultant in health protection of UKHSA South East, said people should be reassured that as a general rule, TB does not spread easily from person to person. People are normally only at increased risk if they have spent many hours in close contact with someone with active TB. Early detection and treatment with antibiotics are key to stopping the spread of the infection. It is important that everyone is aware of the symptoms of TB, as greater awareness can mean the condition is diagnosed much faster. Julie Dawes, chief nurse of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, and Simon Bryant, director of public health for Hampshire County Hospital, County Council, said, "On occasion, we care for patients with tuberculosis at Hampshire Hospitals, and our expert staff are fully trained and equipped to do so. The local community should be reassured that, as a general rule, TB does not spread easily from person to person. People are normally only at increased risk if they have spent many hours in close contact with someone with active TB. Working closely with our partners, every effort is made to ensure patients who need specialised care remain in hospital or in the most appropriate setting for the duration of their treatment. The following are symptoms of TB: persistent and gradually worsening cough, feeling unusually ill or tired, weight loss for no obvious reason, loss of appetite for no obvious reason, sweating attacks, especially at night, coughing up blood. TB is a bacterial disease that, if it affects the lungs or throat, can spread through the air in droplets containing the bacteria. The usual treatment is a 6-month course of TB drugs, and it's vitally important for the entire course to be completed, even though the patient may feel better after just a few weeks.
16 months in jail for serial shoplifter. A prolific shoplifter has been sentenced for a series of thefts in Winchester and a serious assault in Southampton. Jordan Bell, 25, had been sitting outside West Quay when police tried to arrest him, causing him to run away from them. A court heard how, when he took off, Bell barged into a 70-year-old woman who was shopping with her granddaughter in December last year. Prosecutor Keely Harvey said the woman fell to the ground, hitting her elbow and shoulder on the concrete. In a victim statement read out in court, the woman said, "I've never experienced pain like the pain I'm currently in. I did not expect this when I was out doing my Christmas shopping with my family. I can't even change my own shirt. I just feel like my whole life is on hold because I was in the wrong place." Bell of Christchurch Road, Winchester, was arrested and charged with inflicting grievous bodily harm. He He was also charged with 12 counts of theft from a shop after a shoplifting spree, when he took more than £700 worth of stock from Boots, Co-op and Sainsbury's in Winchester. Among the items taken were gift sets, chocolate and spirits, leading to him being banned from the centre of Winchester. He has 52 convictions for 114 offences and has been in custody since the incident outside West Quay on December 21st, 2022. Mitigating, Audrey Archer told Southampton Crown Court that her client has made the most of his time in custody and has a determination to turn things around. She added that he had no intention or idea that he would cause the injury that he did and that his life had spiralled out of control. Judge Brian Forster, KC, said it was a shocking offence and a moment of madness. Bell, who pleaded guilty to the charges against him, was jailed for 16 months and was also banned from entering Boots.
Pub sent to reopen after £1 million transformation. The final touches are being made to a Kingsworthy pub as it prepares to reopen following a £1 million refurbing. 3 months of hard work have nearly come to an end, with the newly transformed Cart and Horses due to open on Tuesday, July the 25th. Ahead of the launch, the Chronicle was given a sneak peek inside. Highlights include a new walker's entrance opening into the biodiverse front garden, an outdoor bar next to a covered seating area, multiple secluded rooms which can be hired out, and a specially commissioned collage of the pub. A colour scheme of terracotta and turquoise runs throughout, with every other wall wallpapered or painted differently. Guests will have multiple seating options, whether that's outside, by the bar, in one of the private rooms, or in a snug by the bay window. Even the female toilets have seats by the mirror. Green King has aimed to keep the Grade 2 listed building's character and history alive. There's a photograph, and it does look a very attractive pub from the outside and very well maintained. It's got exposed original brickwork and open fires. The car park is in three parts, with two electric charging points having been installed, as well as 39 new positions being filled. A few of the original team who worked under the previous owners have remained on board.
Upgrade to night shelter. A night shelter in Winchester is set to receive £25,000 to improve its facilities. Residents at the Winchester Beacon, formerly known as Winchester Church's Night Shelter, have to share showers, basins and toilets in a communal bathroom. The male residents feel vulnerable and unsafe due to the communal bathroom, which has made it difficult to use the facilities and maintain proper hygiene. The Winchester Beacon has provided a temporary home to those experiencing homelessness at various locations since 1988. Since the late 90s, it has been based in Jury Street. Open 365 days of the year, there are 10 bedrooms at the Jury Street premises and an additional 12 beds at the three four-bedroom off-site properties in the local area. The leader and executive member for Hampshire 2050 and Corporate Services, Councillor Rob Humby, approves the grant under his Leaders Community Grant Fund of 2023-24. Councillor Adrian Collett said, "I'm pleased to see an improvement in dignity under this grant. Phase one of the project is to provide a fully accessible shower unit for wheelchair access and those with disabilities to use, and enlarge one of the smaller bedrooms, which needs to be extended to meet HMO officer specifications. Otherwise, it has to be taken out of use. Phase two is the provision of 8 individual lockable shower units. The total project cost is £169,950.
Rural Homes for Broadband Boost. A multi-million pound investment is set to improve broadband in thousands of rural homes and businesses in Hampshire, thanks to the latest boost from Project Gigabyte. The government will give Hampshire County Council £104 million to improve connectivity and deliver new fast broadband connections to homes and businesses. The investment from the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology Fund will benefit 76,000 homes in the Hampshire countryside. City Fibre will build the full fibre connectivity after the UK government awarded it £318 million for work in Norfolk and Suffolk, as well as Hampshire. City Fibre will spend £54 million of its own money in Hampshire. Survey works are anticipated to be completed in December, and the first live connections are expected by January 2024. The project is expected to be completed by March 2029 in the region. Once connected, residents and businesses will have access to fast broadband services over a network that supports speeds of up to 10 Gbps. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Rob Humby, said, "It is fantastic that residents, businesses and communities across rural Hampshire will benefit from this government investment to deliver reliable, high-speed, full-fibre broadband."
Same again for Best Salon. A Winchester hairdresser has been crowned the Best Local Salon. After winning Best Salon in the Best New Salon in the Salon Awards last year, Giuseppe Manco in Staple Gardens claimed the trophy for this year's Best Local Salon. Owner Mr. Manco has more than 20 years' experience. He trained at the Beadle Sassoon Academy and opened his salon in 2021. Giuseppe, aged 36, said, "Winning a competition means a lot to us here at GM. It's a way to begin a new chapter and look ahead, inspiring new ideas and allowing us to put our best foot forward. We opened Giuseppe Manco 2 years ago and have been lucky enough to have achieved a lot of recognition and have a few awards to our name. We ensure that we maintain high standards and a professional attitude, and it's reflected in the fact that our clients do give us glowing recommendations. We are very proud of what we have achieved."
Zoo welcomes arrival of endangered panda. Marwell Zoo has welcomed the miracle arrival of an adorable and fluffy red panda. And there's a picture of it here, and it really is adorable with its mother. Tashi, an endangered red panda, is settling into his new home at Marwell Zoo after arriving from Paradise Wildlife Park in Hertfordshire. The cub's father, Nam Peng, sadly died a month before Tashi was born. Parents Nam Peng and Tilly were part of an international breeding program and had been together 4 years without success. Keepers were thrilled to learn that Tilly started exhibiting nesting behaviours shortly after the passing of Nam Peng. The little red panda cub soon emerged. The tiny cub was affectionately nicknamed Little Red by keepers before being given his official name, and news of his miracle arrival made international headlines. Tashi is Nepalese for good luck or good fortune, and was chosen by a public vote which raised funds for red panda conservation. The youngster is known for his cheeky antics and has even had his own fan base, which has played an important role in raising awareness for the species. Amy Denny, animal team leader, said, "We are beyond excited to welcome Tashi to Marwell. The primates and small mammals team have been working hard to get his habitat ready for him, and we can't wait to get to know him. Red pandas have always been a very special part of the Marwell family, and we are thrilled to have the species back for guests to enjoy and learn about. We'll be keeping everyone up to date with how Tashi settles into his new home, but be sure to come and visit him during his feeding time." In the wild, red pandas are solitary animals that live in the trees of the Himalayas, seeking out a mate during the breeding season once a year. The species is classified as endangered on the International Union for Conservation of Nature Red List, with populations continuing to decline. It is thought that in the last 18 years, red panda populations have decreased by 50%, with fewer than 10,000 left in the wild. Young stay with the mother to learn survival skills such as how to feed themselves until they are around a year old. Tashi was born at Paradise Wildlife Park last July and is now settling into Marwell, where he will live alone for the time being.
House demand fears for pollution safeguard. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, HIWWT, has highlighted the crucial role of nutrient neutrality schemes in protecting waterways from pollution. This follows reports that the government was considering scrapping a policy designed to reduce the environmental impact of new developments amid claims it was blocking new houses being built. Natural England's nutrient neutrality rule ensures that developments in designated areas, such as the Solent region, can be approved only once suitable measures are in place to counteract increases in river pollution. Chief Executive of HIWWT, Debbie Tan, said, "We're very concerned that the government is reportedly considering removing or changing the nutrient neutrality requirement for new developments. Our precious rivers and coastal areas are facing untenable levels of pollution from agriculture, industry and domestic waste, with 82% failing to reach good ecological status. We must have robust measures in place to start tackling this critical issue. Through our nutrient neutrality schemes, we have already proven a cost-effective way to unlock house building while also mitigating the environmental impact of new developments. And those methods have the added benefit of helping people, communities and nature too. Housing developers have complained that the nutrient neutrality schemes have made it much harder to undertake schemes. By rewilding unproductive land previously used for intensive agriculture, the trust aims to reduce the amount of nutrients reaching the Solent while also restoring habitats for wildlife and bringing additional environmental gains. The Wildlife Charity's first such project at Wilder Little Duxmoor on the Isle of Wight has seen a 47% reduction in soil mineral nitrogen levels recorded in less than 2 years. Ms. Tan said, "We appreciate the need for new housing and believe that building homes in the right places is possible, but the impacts must be properly considered and addressed. We know that development comes at a cost to our waterways, so the sensible approach is to make sure that this is balanced by appropriate and effective mitigation measures. We cannot simply wait for long-term promises of upgraded water treatment systems or changes to agricultural policy to counteract this. We've all got to play our part today in the transition to sustainable growth if we are going to give nature the chance to recover."
Council slated over virtual plan meeting. A council leader has blasted Winchester City Council for avoiding any proper scrutiny and debate concerning the North Whiteley development. Public forums for the 3,500 homes currently under construction have been live-streamed by the council since the beginning of the pandemic. The meetings, held 3 times a year, offer residents the opportunity to ask questions and gain insights into the emerging development. The most recent meeting took place in February at Cornerstone Primary School at Whiteley. However, the upcoming meeting, scheduled for July the 17th, will now be held virtually, Winchester City Council has decided. Councillor Sean Woodward, leader of Fareham Borough Council, said, "Winchester City Council is once again resorting to online meetings to avoid proper scrutiny and debate in matters related to the North Whiteley development. The previous in-person meeting, held at Cornerstone Primary School in Whiteley, proved to be highly effective, fostering face-to-face debate and interaction that is impossible to replicate online. It is disheartening that despite our 2-year request for in-person meetings and the success of the previous gathering, we are now forced to revert to online platforms. This decision undermines public participation, scrutiny and meaningful interaction among members." In response, a WCC spokesperson said the council is committed to transparency and therefore makes all meetings available online. This is not something which is all councils do. Some meetings are hybrid and some meetings are online only, but they are all streamed live for the public to watch. They are then made available online for people to watch back at a later date. Many more people can find out what's happening that way. As an example, more people watched the last meeting online than attended in person. We know from our YouTube figures that there have been 231 views of the last forum meeting so far. Far more than attendance in person, because online is clearly working well for people in North Whiteley. The chair of the meeting decided that the next forum would be held online only.
I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 21st of July 2023. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And of course, thanks to today's readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jackie Donnellan.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful. Thank you for listening, and I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.